I think there were these experiments about that were about random reads and writes, and with fragmented initial state and clean initial state, and that's where we start discussing of what were clean state, and we end up like with a 2-hour discussion.
That's true.
By clean state, I mean is to rewrite the whole SSD once, and then do experiments.
Mm.
So what I did was to rewrite the whole SSD, do the experiments of the clean sequential and random read, write a considerable amount of the device randomly, probably almost 100% of the device in random, and then do the fragmented read and write. Sorry, the fragmented read for sequential and random.
Mm-hmm. So you write the entire disk sequentially, and then you do the experiments for read and write,
mm-hmm.
both sequential and random.
Right.
And before each experiment, you set the state to clean.
Right.
And then you do the same experiment when you each time you set the state to some random.
Right.
Fragmented.
Right.
To a fragmented state by doing random I/O operations.
Yes.
And this is the graph.
Let me see. CF was mentioned random. Yes. This is the CDF for the reads. I also stored the data of randomly writing to the whole device, big part of the device. But GNU Plus couldn't handle the amount of data, so it eat all the memory of the machine. So I didn't know how to plot that. So I could just plot the reads and writes, which I limit to be 5,000 reads requests.
No, I'm trying to understand this. So you do the same number of operations for reads?
Yes, in each of these cases, I send 5,000 requests.
Mm-hmm.
For sequential,
mm-hmm.
and random, with clean or fragmented initial state. So.
And for the writes, you do much more IOs.
For the write, I only do one experiment, which is start from a clean state and write randomly over all the device.
So that's a lot of operations.
That's a lot of operations. Actually, it took probably half a day or so. It's complete.
Maybe you could sample the second half or some portion of the second half and plot that. Of that experiment.
I can try that.
Because you're only interested in some steady-state CDF, right?
Exactly. It's because, well, the thing is that, I can do that. Probably I can also take one request and skip the next one. To see, take one and skip one. Mm-hmm. So on. To just have a sample of the experiment and how half of the size.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out that I didn't know that GNU Plus for some reason loads the whole files into memory. So if you have a 500 megabytes file, it will load the whole thing to memory.
Mm.
That's not good. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The thing here is that actually it's exactly the same line for initial and fragmented state, in both cases in sequential and in random read. So the thing is that there was absolutely no difference.
For the read?
For the read.
So this is a sequential?
This is sequential, that's right, and this is random.
So both the random lines are overlapping, you're saying?
Yes.
But they look different, right?
But actually I made the test. I remove one of the lines one of the lines and see that they were actually overlapping.
And they are.
And they do.
That was interesting. So this means the state does not really matter for the memorize device.
At least for the memorize device.
For the read operations.
Yeah, and actually it did this experiment for Samsung. I don't know if they put the results there or not. But for Samsung, I don't know if it was exactly the same.
No, it was. So it doesn't matter either.
At least in these two devices.
In the Sigmatrix paper, they actually have a difference for the reads.
They have a difference, and they work. I check, and they work with the Intel device.
Mm-hmm.
So probably the Intel device do something different.
Hmm. In the case of the Samsung, I think it's since we know that it's block level mapping, we would expect that the reads will not undergo any change at all.
Yeah.
Right? And is that a reasonable thing to assume?
Well, I guess
with block level mapping.
Yeah, there is no fragmentation.
There is no fragmentation with block level mapping, and
well,
therefore,
as long as the framework writes the block in the same plane or something like that, because the thing is that if the framework writes that so that the parallelism cannot be used, then you will see some drop in the
And that might happen with the block level mapping.
That could happen.
That could
depending on your granularity of allocation.
Right, but I think that's a different problem, rather than the fragmentation that we've been talking, which is basically a data block containing valid pages elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And could be multiple block blocks or
right.
Be a single one.
Right.
That's kind of expensive operation. I mean, that's when we are mostly concerned about the performance. I mean, data has been affected for weeks and for weeks.
I think Lewis's point is that the fragmented SSD and an SSD which has block level mapping, but the mappings can arbitrarily change, can both lead to degraded read performance because you are not able to invest all the parallelism available on the flash. So if, let's say block 1 and block 2, because block 1 got remapped and now lie on the same plane and you're trying to read sequentially, you have to cannot read in parallel, you have to sequentialize those acts with a block level mapping. So in some sense it can have an effect on performance. But apparently, at least with the Samsung device, it seems that's not the
same.
Actually, we know that it is very likely to have block level mapping because of some of the previous experiments, right? And apparently, the random writes do not affect the read performance. So what is this last graph?
That last graph is the same graph with Samsung.
Okay.
I have a question a bit for Justice. I mean, in the previous graph working with Samsung,
What previous graph?
In the first graph you were talking.
The memorize?
Memorize. Yeah, memorize. But in reference to the Samsung, you don't have the graph for that.
This is the Samsung.
Okay. So for the random read experiment, which also is not affected, you say, for fragmented state or not.
Mm-hmm.
So the experiment is issuing large requests that will potentially exploit parallelism? Or how is the random experiment?
I see what you mean. No, it's just 4K.
4K? That may not show the parallelism.
So sequential here is not really... So actually, sequential. If there is prefetching, the performance will be impacted due to fragmentation. But if there is no prefetching, then the performance probably does not get affected, even if there is fragmentation.
because of the way we are doing sequential read operations, always 4K and synchronous. Right? In effect, it's synchronous,
yes,
because there is only one outstanding request at any time at the device. So one thing which, there are two possibilities. One is that there is no prefetching, and the other is there is prefetching, but the device is fragmented, and therefore there is no prefetching, and the device fragmentation, the device is unfragmented. So in that case, we have the same performance, right? If there is no prefetching, then it doesn't matter whether you're doing sequential or random. It really doesn't matter.
Yes.
Because you cannot use the parallelism anyway with 4K IOs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one possibility. That's why our lines look exactly the same, that there is no prefetching. Alternatively, there is prefetching, but the device is unfragmented.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, when is the IO stream considered sequential? When it has sequential LDAs, or when the actual read of the data is sequentially
in the
executed in the flash?
From a firmware standpoint, if you were to design a firmware, you would determine a sequential stream based on the LDA access pattern, right? Because obviously the operating system does not know about the internal mapping on the flash. And the firmware acts on based on what the operating system requests, and it can optimize only based on the request stream from the operating system. So if it detects some sort of sequential stream coming from the OS, then it can potentially prefetch data that is sequential in terms of LBA, right? And but those may be located anywhere on the flash.
Correct. So then, if we assume that there is fragmentation in the device, that the IOS is still requested in a sequential way, then if, let's assume also that there's prefetching in the SSD, then is prefetching going to take place?
Or not.
Assuming a fragmented state.
That depends. I guess that would depend on the firmware itself, right? The design of the firmware. If the firmware design is going to make exceptions when the device is fragmented so that the parallelism cannot be employed, then you won't have the fetching. So this is something which is specific to the firmware. It's hard to make a generalization here. But one generalization that you can certainly make is that if prefetching is available and the device is unfragmented, then you would have prefetching. That seems easy to do. But whether the same prefetching would be employed when there is a fragmentation in the device, I guess that's the choice of the firmware. I think we probably have to be careful that the level of detail we go into when interpreting each of these graphs, or even when talking about the performance and the various parameters or factors that affect the performance, because too much detail maybe, you know, we are shooting ourselves in the foot with,
mm-hmm,
with trying to talk about a lot of these specifics. There's just so many possibilities, and the biggest problem with such reasoning is that the firmware can do whatever it wants. It can be designed in a really stupid way, completely opposed to all normal or logical ways of designing such firmware. And then we open ourselves for criticism by going into that detail. What we can do is, from, for instance, looking at these graphs, is to say that in certain devices, the initial state of the device does not seem to matter for read performance. read performance, for this type of experiment, can we claim that by doing these two experiments, we cover all possible states of the device? And remember that we are talking about steady state, no transitory effects. So, does the read performance indeed is independent of the initial state when taking into a long-term view of the long-term performance of the read operations? Now, one thing which we still haven't resolved based on our past discussion is this: is the clean state of the device, and the reason for doing those additional operations beyond writing to the entire device sequentially. I'm not sure if that will make a difference to the performance or not, but it seems something that we should certainly investigate and find out, because the Sigmatrix paper does talk about this improved mechanism for creating a clean state. And if we find different graphs for that experiment, I mean, the performance is different for that clean state and this other two states, then we cannot have the same observation anymore that the read performance is immaterial of the initial state of the device.
I'm afraid.
Mm. But once again, even if we do that experiment, right, it's hard to claim that we've covered all the states, all possible states.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do find that with performance exactly the same for this new improved clean state that described in the Sigmatrix paper, all we can say is that it seems that the read performance does not depend on the state of the device, but we cannot claim that as a certainty. I think we get more and more confident as we do these, you know, set up these different states of the device, but in no way do we have considered all possible states of the system. Okay, so there was this other experiment that you did with mixing reads and writes.
I don't have any experiment with mixed reads and writes. I have it just listed, but I don't even know how to do it yet. You're talking about mingled read and write.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was. I just list this because in the Sigmatrix paper they have that experiment, which I thought was interesting. But I don't have any experiments for that yet.
I mean, unless we find a reason for doing the experiment, we probably shouldn't spend.
No, actually, for now, I'm more interested on repeating another experiment that I think are more important.
Hmm.
Like, probably the logical block size is one, and the full stripe size is another one.
Hmm.
And at this point, I don't know what about the segment writes and partitions. How should I proceed with that? I have some results. I don't know if I need to repeat that. And I don't know if that is even useful, those segment writes and partitions.
I think the segment writes are interesting. I mean, especially in one of the flash papers in Asplos last year, it's called Gordon. They actually talk about using multiple writing points within the flash and to write sequentially. So the question is, what is the advantage of writing to not one but multiple segments in parallel? But write to those sequentially.
Yeah, but we don't have the control of that kind of operation in the SSD, right? The only thing we can do is to divide the whole LDA space into small segments and write them sequentially.
Right.
But we don't know what is actually happening on them. Right?
If there is a some block level mapping going on inside the SSD, we can assume that the segments that we are writing to sequentially all will translate to blocks getting written sequentially inside the SSD, inside on the flash, if there is block level mapping. And I understand what you're saying, but that the answer to your question depends on the mapping, of course. And if it's a hybrid mapping, then when we're writing sequentially within a segment, it probably gets absorbed in some block sequentially again. Now, as you increase the number of segments, do those writes get intermingled within a log block, in which case the switch merges will no longer be possible, or do they get absorbed in multiple log blocks so that you can still avail of the switch merge operation? I think those are the questions that you might get answers to. And how many segments can you simultaneously write into until the log block starts getting polluted with non-sequential data? Maybe the answer is just one. Okay, you can write only into one segment. If you write to two segments sequentially, although you're writing sequentially, when you look at each segment independently, because they are getting absorbed into the same log block, it's no longer sequential in terms of performance on the flash.
Okay.
So this might help us to motivate, for instance, simultaneous sequential writing within multiple segments, as specified in, for instance, Gordon, the Gordon paper. They have this optimization. Does it make sense or not?
Yeah, and there is this other experiment that is partition. I don't know exactly, actually, you know, at this point I'm a little bit confused. So we said that we divide the segment in sub-segments and write in each of them in a round robin fashion. Something like that. That's what we said.
You can't really recollect the experiment.
Yeah, that's what I say here. I had another idea of partition some time back, and there was divide the whole SSD in, let's say, four parts, and have one segment in each of those partitions, and then when we have write, select those partitions for write in a round robin way.
Mm-hmm.
That's one partition, right? And the other version is to do exactly the same as segment write, but divide the segment into small subsegments. And when a write is incoming, you write you select a segment in a round robin way, the sub segment in a round robin.
So all these are very interesting, but I think the key is that for each of these possibilities, we need to have a hypothesis to say, okay, this is the hypothesis we are trying to evaluate based on this experiment. So with the segment simulator, what is the hypothesis? Why is it important to investigate writing into multiple segments simultaneously as opposed to writing into only one segment at any given time? Sequential, right? So we are only talking about sequential writes here. So that's the first case. And second is this partition, where you partition the SSD. Well, what is the hypothesis that we are trying to evaluate or validate? And similarly for the third case. For each experiment, there has to be some motivation which is built on some hypothesis, right? So in the case of segment simulator, I think the hypothesis that we can come up with is, well, when by writing to multiple segments at the same time and choosing these, assuming that you choose these segments in some random order, the probability of writing in parallel to these segments is increased. Whereas on the other hand, if you write to a single segment, maybe although you write to multiple distinct locations, maybe you do not use the parallelism available inside the flash estimates. Right? So that is sort of the hypothesis, although it has to be more well developed. Similarly, if we need to have hypotheses for the other experiments also that you're proposing. For each experiment, we need to have some hypothesis statement. I think that might be a good way to motivate the experiment and also force us to think, okay, where is this experiment coming from or where is it going, right? So I'm not sure if the current write-up has discussion along those lines, which is the motivation for the experiment.
Yeah, probably some of them are just what you're saying.
But having a concrete hypothesis, because motivation may be a collection of statements, right, may not be a hypothesis. But having a very concrete hypothesis will allow us to really condense all that motivation and make it really, you know, concrete, right? So, and a hypothesis should be a single sentence. Maybe you have multiple hypotheses, then you have one sentence for each of those hypotheses. But it has to be in the format of a hypothesis. Well, this is what we want to validate. What does this experiment allow us to gain? You know, what knowledge are we creating from this experiment? If the hypothesis is validated, we create a knowledge. If it's not invalidated, maybe we again create some knowledge, maybe it's not as useful. So, if you perhaps orient the discussion from that direction, it might help. If you look at some of those papers, I think Even the Sigmetrics paper, each experiment is
starts with a question.
It's basically a hypothesis, right? Say, okay, does the random writes do random reads interfere with random writes, or something like that? And then they understand or answer this question. So here they are asking a question rather than stating a hypothesis. A hypothesis would be slightly different, and it would say that random reads affect random writes. So that's an answer to a question, but it's really a hypothesis because you have to then validate or invalidate that statement. So we could do questions or we could do hypothesis. I think hypothesis will force you to be more specific. Now, questions can be more sort of hand waving, can say how, well, we want to, how does I don't know, maybe I shouldn't go in that direction because I'm just digressing, but you understand the point, which is that having a hypothesis or even a question, I think, will certainly help us understand what we are doing much better.
I think another dimension that we perhaps should consider is the type of devices that we are working with. In the beginning, I remember one of the motivations of, or many of the motivations of the experiments were paired with dosing the deconstructing great arrays for finding the page size, the block size, and things like that, strike size, full strike size. And we did not execute those experiments in the same way because we realized through experimentation later on that the device does not support multiple outstanding IOs, right? So that would be one type of device, and the other one is the new type of device that hopefully we get, the Intel one that does support the MCQ, for which we have more freedom to do specifically this last experiment that you were discussing, the partitioning, the segment, concurrent writes, how it affects in terms of performance, where they conflict if we align them to the relative offset position, or which is arbitrary write,
mm-hmm.
and increase the probability of the parallelism. Experiment that we know we cannot execute in the first type of devices, the non-NCQ, in which the only degree of freedom is through the type of the request. Right. I think that's an important point that we should also make, since that was kind of a roadblock in the beginning when we were trying to do experiments and we saw that really there was no major difference, and the main reason was because of all the IOs were just being sequentialized.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know, maybe if we should divide experiments according to that, according to the nature of the device.
Mm.
And I mean, specifically would be whether they implement NCQ or not.
Mm.
Even for this experiment of the fragmentation, it might be the case that because they are non-NCQ devices, they are just exposing the same performance.
Mm.
And we don't see any difference because in the end, it's just the same IO. There is the major cost that it's affected or that's induced in a fragmented state.
That's true. And we certainly need to repeat our experiments once we get the Intel device, and maybe we get quite different results from an MCQ device like the Intel one. So yeah, that reminds me that I need to look into that order again, the status of the order. I know that there's some big mess with the financials. Pantastar financial system, which delayed all kinds of orders, and now there is this new bureaucracy that I have to go and approve by logging into Pantastar each of those purchases, and for that I need to first get access into this financial system, which so far I have cleverly avoided for the last 5 years because they're all being done by the staff, and now I'm forced to go and do that. So fortunately our controllers slipped in before all of this mess started. That's why we got the controllers. But I'm not sure if the Intel devices have to go through something similar. So in any case, I agree that maybe we have to think carefully about the implications of NCQ or no NCQ on the hypothesis that we are testing and the results that we find from the experiments. So that is something to also keep in mind. So Lewis, how do you want to proceed on the paper, because we have these two different directions, right? One is the, all these different experiments that it's good that we now have a list of these experiments. I think that's important. Maybe the next thing to do would be to, come up with very concrete hypotheses, also taking into account the requirement for the NCQ property, and maybe then we can better motivate some of these experiments. And then the other direction, which is the modeling part, where we are trying to come up with a flowchart of operations that are internal to the SSD, and trying to map some of those results to specific paths in those state diagrams. So I'm trying to see how we can bring all of this together.
I was thinking that, and in that sense, I think probably Jason and Mario mentioned that, actually it seems like I mean, if we have a complete model of the SSDs and of the operations of the SSD, probably we can even have two different papers for this work. Right? So this first paper where we have a bunch of profiling workloads, right? We give good insights where we compare them with what the Sigmetrix guys did. And even probably introduce some of the models that we have, probably, you know, a brief or just mention what could be happening, probably with support of the graphs or the path, the same. I think this is something that I mentioned, saying that, okay, this could be the path that is happening, so probably we don't have, or the SSD, we can have, I don't know, cache or something like that, or you explain the behavior in this way. And there is this other paper, and probably these are the two paths that I mentioned. Well, I guess in summary is that I see both paths with different papers each. So I think Jason mentioned that we can come up with a model where it gives you a good estimate in terms of average response time. I don't remember if this was some kind of a stochastic thing that we cannot submit to Sigmetrix, something like that. So that's the way I see it. See more like two different papers. Because okay. I think it's too much information for one single paper. Probably with their profiling and, you know, thinking through, be careful, giving good insights, I think we could have a single paper just with them.
Okay.
I don't know, what do you think?
Sorry?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I would believe initially that we should combine both aspects in a
single paper
to make it more, especially to work on the novelty or to support the novelty part.
Mm-hmm.
It may be that the Sigmetrix is comprehensive enough that will intersect largely with a similar profiling type of paper.
Mm-hmm.
There are also a few other papers that work in that direction. So it might be kind of difficult to make this profiling only paper outstand among the others and to justify any sufficient novelty.
Mm.
Maybe no, but that's the kind of the risk.
Mm.
And in the other case, if we enrich the single word with diagrams and with the model part, well, the model part, in fact, I mean, that's independent of the diagrams, where we are able to kind of outline what's going on in each experiment by providing a specific operations that are going on, then that might be also something that might increase the chances of being different.
So you're saying that apart from having this high-level chart or the comprehensive chart that you're putting together at this point, for each experiment we show like paths within that chart to say, okay, in this experiment we believe that this is what is going on, that these requests are being cached, and that's why most of the times are in this range because of this certain operation, and then the remaining operations follow this other path, and that's why the times look different, and we should point to the graph and say that, okay, these times are higher or lower. Is that what you're saying?
Right. I mean, the idea would be to explain in kind of on the basis of primitive operations of the SSD, what's going on in a certain experiment. More specifically, in experiments that are more complex than a single, let's say, than a controlled, you know, streamline of IOs, which is kind of read-only or write-only, it would be interesting to tackle that read and write mix of workloads, where there are, let's say, two concurrent operations trying to access the same plane or same shared resource, and then the one has to wait, and you have different latencies. As compared when they run as a read-only I/O stream or write-only.
Okay, I think...
anyway, I mean, we don't need make any decision, I think, at this point.
Yeah. I think maybe the first thing we should look into is just to identify the set of profiling experiments and to improve the model. And I think I see merit in having two papers, and I see merit also in having a single paper. And the single paper, I think, is more challenging to write because it requires us to integrate many different ways of thinking and to provide a coherent picture. Having the separate papers allows us to be, you know, have a more easy time, perhaps, in writing the papers, but then the contributions may not stand out as much as if we were to really integrate these two very nicely. So I do see, you know, pros and cons of taking both approaches. And, you know, personally, at this point, I don't think I have a preference. Preference in the sense that, you know, I certainly see more value in, you know, in a paper that puts everything together. So, but I also see that the drawback is that it is much harder to write a paper that makes sense and does so in a really nice way. It is easy to sort of have this paper fall apart, that it's going in many different directions, does not have a coherent message, right? And that's the risk.
Yeah, there has to be a main thesis. And then in this case, at least, there are like two interesting topics that can be elaborated along, which is the profiling and the discovery of characteristics of each, you know, certain SSD, and the other one is kind of understanding the various operations that go inside the SSD from an abstract point of view and see how they interact in mixed environments, in mixed workflows. So the topic, I mean, broadens, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I already see it, you know, having many different directions that in which it can go, potentially. It can be heavy more on the profiling side, and then, or heavy more on the modeling side. Having all of these integrate nicely is would be the key to have a successful paper like that.
Right.
So, at some point, we need to start thinking from a paper standpoint, having a skeleton, whichever we decide whether we want to go in two directions or single direction. Maybe we can explore both possibilities and see which one looks more promising. So maybe we should start doing that next week. After we make, maybe Lewis, after you do one more pass on the specific experiments to identify ones that are no longer promising and come up with hypotheses, as many hypotheses as we can, and if we cannot come up with a hypothesis, we should discuss it during the meeting and try to come up with one. And if there is no hypothesis for a certain experiment, maybe that experiment does not even belong in the paper. Right? Because that might just be distracting and wasting space in the paper. So let's go through a round of revising the list of experiments with hypotheses. Let's work on making the model more solid. I'll bring the printout so we can discuss it today. But we probably perhaps need more time. And perhaps
do we have time now for the flowchart? I can fetch the papers.
Okay.
Maybe.
Are we supposed to meet at 3 o'clock or a print?
we decide to meet at 3 or 4?
3.
Power of two.
It is, it is 4 each.
Right.
It's odd though.
For Jason, whenever he comes.
Special.
Get your week off.
Yeah, we should go ahead and discuss
over
this. Yeah, I think we can spend another 15 minutes talking about this. That's fine.
Yeah, it's going to be really quick, I think. Well, that last time I said that, we spent like an hour. Okay, I wanted to do a general block diagram for the SSD, where I show the main components, which are three so far.
Mm-hmm.
The cost interface, the SSD controller, and the flash package array. And there is a, I think I should draw this general diagram on the board.
Sure.
Because it's going to be really helpful. This
yeah, you can erase, I think it's all erasable, how much ever you need.
Okay, so we got the SSD controller. I'm going to draw this in a nice diagram as well. Or maybe some convenience. Bus interface. There's communication between this. This is the outside, maybe the operating system. And then we have flash package 0, flash package I. And let's make it there are 10 flash packages. This is the data bus. And I'm also thinking that we should consider the control lines.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, this the direction of the arrows is in block. For this one, I will also believe that it's block. So these are control.
Why is the control, I mean, what does the arrow mean?
Oh, the flow of the data.
Control flow?
The
data flow or control flow?
In this case, it's data, right? And the other one is the control.
Okay, so in the case of the control, why do you have double arrows?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because initially these are kind of self-contained units, and they don't necessarily know the existence of the controller, right? But I would guess that the controller, or rather the flash packages, can put information in some registers or some place where the controller can read, and then after this information is read, it can be transferred to the controller, on demand of the controller. Something similar that happens with the data bus. The flash packages put the requested data, the bytes in certain wires, and then it travels to the bus. And
I think we can work on the direction of the arrows
yeah.
At a later time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would need some work, but I think it's solvable.
Right. And then for the flash packages, we know that usually these are divided in planes, with the plane 0, plane 1, and so forth. And each one of these planes has a data register.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be kind of the belongs to a certain die, which would be the die 0, similarly you can have plane 1 here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so last time we discussed about the graph 1.1,
mm-hmm.
and more specifically about the function that is below the second decision point,
mm-hmm.
where there's an operation conflict,
mm-hmm.
with the read, with the current read request.
Mm-hmm.
And I abstracted this operation when there's one conflicting operation in this box that I called wait for power's completion.
Mm-hmm.
O means meaning an operation.
Right.
This operation can be a read, a write, or a garbage collection operation. So that is expanded in 1.2.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's walk through the diagram, starting from the first box, which is in progress operation O.
Mm-hmm.
That is just for notation. Might not necessarily be an action. And then the first decision point is we check if this operation is a read.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of we just look this as the operation that's going on between the controller and the flash packages. So there's a read request in the controller, and there's a read also in progress within the package that we need to read from. Right. So in this case, we need to
The assumption here is that the controller can have only one outstanding request with each flash package?
No, there is no assumption into that. No.
Because the planes can be potentially read in parallel.
Correct.
And there could be multiple control
operations
going on in parallel between the controller and some flash package.
Right. Yeah, probably that constraint should be spelled in the second decision point of the 1.1, where
the operation conflicts,
where we verify the operation conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This may not be. I mean, this has to be implemented as a function in the end, right? And most likely, it's going to be that if the two pages that are being requested or two
mm-hmm.
read requests fall in the same plane, they cannot
right.
be processed in parallel. For some reason. Right. So going back to the decision point where it's a read, we have two type of activities that we need
mm-hmm.
to wait for, basically. One is the flash read of R, the current ongoing operation in the SSD. After the page is read from the plane into their register, we need to wait for this R data to be transferred over the data bus. So that is the blue line and gets to the controller, and that's the end of the wait. That's all.
So the other, I guess the other assumption here is that when there is a conflicting operation, in that case the conflict is at the level of the plane
mm-hmm.
And not at the level of the data register. Because it might be that it's just that the data register is occupied at this point, that the transfer from the plane into the data register already occurred,
mm-hmm.
and you're just waiting for the data register to become empty or available. So
to carry the data over the data bus
mm-hmm.
into the controller. Right. That is a very important point, which is kind of at which point of this operation this read request is hitting,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah, I should include that.
So
in
maybe one thing which you could do is the operation O is in progress, but we don't know in which stage it is, right? And here maybe you still need to read some data from the flash into the data register. So maybe this can be a dotted line instead. So to indicate that it may or may not be
mm-hmm.
the case. And the transfer of R's data over the data bus, I guess this is a required step. Because if it already occurred, then the operation is no longer in progress.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So maybe you could have the intermediate step being an optional step, and this the final step maybe is a required step. And this is one possibility.
Right. If you look in graph, in diagram 1.3,
mm-hmm.
there's a box at the very beginning that says estimate the GC's progress so far.
Uh-huh.
Something similar. I'm not doing anything with this estimation
mm-hmm.
Yet in this diagram, but
mm-hmm.
that's something I thought for the GC, and now that I think it's also has to be included in this other
mm-hmm.
diagram for the same argument, that we can hit this operation at multiple stages. In this case, there are two main stages. And we can't hit as any percentage of those stages, in fact, right? Could be that we are half reading the flash page,
mm-hmm.
or we are half transferring the page from over the data bus. And I should, yeah, could be a percentage of work done so far. I should include that estimation. Okay, so in the node, over the node path, we verify if this is a write request. If it is, it's very similar to the other one, except that the operations are switched or exchanged. Like, we need to first transfer the write data over the data bus, and then we need to write into the flash.
Right, so once again, which one is the optional one? In this case, the first one is the optional, again.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Now, what Jason means by the stochastic model is that we know how much time this takes, and we know how much time this takes, mm-hmm. but we don't know what is the progress of the operation. So if we assume that the probability of their progress is equally distributed between completed and just started, then we can come up with some sort of distribution for these times.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just a uniform distribution between zero and that maximum value. And then you pick at random at each, for each time there is a conflict, and then you will have a distribution of times that should reflect what you see in a real device.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they'll not be exactly the same, but they will have the same distribution.
Right.
And similarly for this guy as well, for the writes also.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm thinking of a second option, which might be just considering the amount of time that passed since the last request and
to the same plane.
To the same plane, correct.
I guess you could do that, but then that would require you to further elaborate and keep track of state of past history. That makes the model possibly more complex.
Mm-hmm. Let me think of that. I mean, if the IO requests are separated by a sufficiently large time, and if this time is just greater than the time that takes to execute these two stages, then there's not going to be conflict in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, then we can measure the duration of these two stages and see this separation in time between the two requests and try to see where it's going to hit.
Right.
And I'm thinking in that way, but maybe more complicated. I mean, I'm gonna check if that can be expressed in terms of diagram.
Maybe we don't need to express it in the diagram.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the stochastic model can be built using the diagram, but doesn't have to be part of the diagram.
Mm-hmm.
I think the diagram needs to be simple as possible.
Right. Right.
Okay. So let's go into this wait for DC.
Yeah.
I think this is pretty good.
This reflects, I mean, the problem of this diagram is basically that it reflects kind of the worst case.
Mm.
When you execute these two stages in its entirety.
Right.
Okay, so for the no of the last decision point, we execute a wait of the GC. So the third option is that if it's not a real write, it's a GC, right? So the GC, and after that wait, that's the end of this diagram, and then for the GC, we start estimating the progress so far done by the GC. That was just the idea of computing that with the percentage of execution in the GC path. I'm not doing anything with that time, but I think it's going to be similar to what I need to include in the previous diagram. So here, what comes next is basically almost an algorithmic description of what the GC does and what we know almost the steps of the GC are, for example, the first one is the selection of the victim block, which I call L. So GSA has to basically reclaim some space.
Now, first of all, I think before we go into the discussion of GSA, I think here we are talking about a specific class of SSDs, which are hybrid. Is that right, or not?
If we think of the hybrid, I mean of the mapping, in general, maybe this the garbage collection may be independent of the type of mapping.
Because you need to, even if you have a block level, so let's say you have a block level operation, a block level mapping, then each time you perform a write operation, you erase synchronously and overwrite. Or maybe you don't erase synchronously. Maybe you just do a merge and write and then do erase operation in the background. Okay, so then you have GC even in that case. So just that we have to think about GCs where based on the different mapping possibilities.
There is a difference, fundamental difference, when there's a hybrid mapping, which I consider here.
Okay,
in fact,
this is for primarily hybrid mapping?
It's for hybrid and block.
And block. Okay.
Page is not elaborated yet here, because I essentially ran out of time. It's not because I don't think
it's
realistic.
Yeah, but the page is something that's really straightforward, right? It's, like in the case of well, I don't consider, in the case of a block mapping, I don't see it as a garbage collection, right? Because the only thing you have to do is really simple. It's just to erase the blocks that are free. That's all you have to do.
Mm-hmm. So it's similar to block-level mapping in that sense?
It's similar to block-level mapping in that sense. So it's probably the same.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you don't need an erase block. No, actually, it's the same, because if you are, I think it's block mapping and page is probably the same.
For the garbage collection.
Yeah.
And in both cases, you have to wait for a block to be erased.
Erased.
There is no merge operation.
There is no merge operation or anything else happening.
Mm.
So I think your diagram is still valid.
Right. Let's see. Let's go over the hybrid mapping.
Mm-hmm.
After we selected the block that we're going to garbage collect, and if it's a hybrid mapping, we
now first of all, the part where you select the victim block, in some sense you don't really care about that all that much. Do you? I mean, so here we are waiting for a GC on a specific plane, which is blocking the read operation.
The read operation, right.
So which means that the identification of the, now this plane, the GC could either involve a merge operation or an erase operation or both,
mm-hmm.
right? So it could be that you're reading from block, writing to a different block, within the same plane, and then you go erase a third block or the block that you read from, whichever may be the case. So it seems like from at this point, while you're waiting, when you consider that the plane on which you're trying to perform the read operation, there is some GC related operations going on. It could be any of these operations.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, maybe you have to wait for all of those operations to be done.
Right. Which I think it makes sense to execute the GC operation from beginning to the end. It would be perhaps more chaotic to intermingle read operations, write operations in the middle of a GC.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in practice feasible, but seems to be more complex.
So it seems like you're already doing that in some sense, and the case with the block and page level mapping, where the only operation that needs to be done is an erase operation, is also handled separately in this diagram. Okay, that's good.
All right. So in the or the yes path, we read the Pali pages in L, and we put all those pages in a variable V. Again, this is kind of an algorithmic description. Right? Then we identify what data blocks are referenced by the set V, and we declare that as a V. And we start reading all those data blocks referenced by V. So I, if you see, this is kind of a typical flowchart diagram where you see variables and conditions. So I use the index I to signify the current data block. And then if we assume D is an array, or I mean it's a set in general, and in the current position I, it's not null, then we're going to read that data block. This read, I think it's going to be the same read of the first operation, right? I mean the entire data, the read of an entire data block, although may not conflict with anything else. Then we merge all those valid pages in V that are related to the block VI, and we name that as V prime. And then we need to write back V prime. We don't say where, right? Obviously, it cannot be into L again. It's most likely going to be elsewhere. But this is, I think this is the same write operation that it's not elaborated yet, that it's going to be just the same type of logic. I mean, a call to the same function. And then we read the next data block that's referenced by the valid page CNL. And we do that in a loop until we exhaust all the data blocks. So this is basically abstracting this idea of doing the multiple merges with data blocks and writing the valid data elsewhere so that L is free to be deleted.
So here the base case is not handled where there is only one data block referenced by V, and in that case you have a switch merge rather than a data movement.
Yes. There is only...
So in that case, you don't need a, what do you call it? You don't need to move any data in or out.
Right.
Is that already handled?
No, no, but I'm thinking if that is really a garbage collection operation.
It's a switch merge.
It's a switch merge, right? When you sequentially write the pages of a data block into a log block, and then...
So you choose a log block to be garbage collected, and you realize that, well, this log block is an exact reflection of a data block. Then to garbage collect, what you need to do is to change the pointer of the data block to the log block, and it is the original data block.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. It should be part of this.
So that would be some sort of base case for, or exception case for this
switch merge. Right. And, well, this diagram then would be the full merge.
Mm-hmm. So here, I guess, after you identify D as data block referenced by V, then there might be a decision point where you say, is D equal to 1 or not? If D is equal to 1, then you do switch merge. If it's greater than 1, then you go about doing this other thing by copying data out and so on, doing the full merge, and finally you do erase. Now the question really is, the erase block, how many blocks do you get to erase? Do you get to erase all the blocks, all the data blocks that you copied data out of, or not?
All the data blocks that I merged with the log. Over here, I'm not erasing anything.
I know. So you go back here, and then you do erase a block.
Yeah, but if you erase the block
you
select,
you
but that's
block.
Fine, because after you select a block that you free here, or you that you clean here, right, you won't have any reference data blocks, which means that you will go straight to no, and you will erase the block right away. So I think in that case it's fine. What I was thinking is about the switch merge. is that it should be even before what you said. It should be before the read value pages, because in the case of base merge, you don't read any
data. You don't read any
data.
Any data
that's
from L, yeah.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, maybe...
Maybe you can just switch these boxes anyway.
For which boxes?
Read valid data and or you can just say data block reference to within L.
Or maybe even after the decision point.
Yeah.
After I select the victim, we verify if this is corresponds to a sequential update of a data block.
I think you have to go into hybrid mapping.
I have to pass the hybrid mapping?
Yeah. Because this happens only with the hybrid mapping.
Yeah.
This additional checking.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah, it's after the...
Yeah. Now,
there are things that
maybe you can remove this altogether, this one. You need that? Maybe you can just say data blocks referenced within L, valid data blocks.
By L, yes.
So you can merge those two, and maybe you can have a decision point here before you go into the read-write operations, and that might help. Now, in the case of hybrid mapping, is it possible that there are some invalid or to be erased blocks already out there that you just need to erase without having to go through a explicit garbage collection operation?
Yeah, so I think that's the case that you just said, right? That is you gain all the
data blocks and then you just make them available to be erased.
They are just available
for erasure. So now the question is that if I go into this direction, do I need to consider the possibility that I only do an erase operation of one of those blocks that have already been...
No, it doesn't, because when you go through this operation of selecting the reference...
Selecting the victim.
The victim, no, not the victim, but the reference blocks by the block that you select as victim, your set will be empty. Right?
That's
so
true.
You go straight to grade.
So that is another condition. So the first thing you check if B is empty, which means that there are no valid pages in that, then you go to erase directly. Else, if V has all pages valid, but the exact reflection of another data block, then you do a switch merge. Else, you do the full merge.
Actually, I don't think the
so I think position point is
needed. The MTD is a special case, because I think it's already taken into account here. I mean, the empty will make this null right away. We'll check
back.
I see.
Maybe, I mean, algorithmically may not be valid to say VI.
Because
DI, actually, this is some kind of for all, right?
Right. But they did.
Yeah.
Well, we can say that if V is null or VI, it's different of null.
I think you can handle it.
Yeah.
So.
It's not, right. But I would do something like for all V in V. Mm-hmm. And you get rid of the I.
On the I, yeah. But then that might be better.
Mm.
For all T small and to B.
Mm.
And then if no, then we erase. Now the other path is the no in the decision point, where it's a block mapping. I'm assuming it's block mapping.
I think like Lewis pointed out, it's probably the same case for page as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say block or page mapping.
Right.
And in both cases, you just have a choose to erase the block. There is no merge requirements in either case.
Correct.
Right. Because correct. The thing is that any block that you select, and this is somewhat optional, right? No.
Which one is optional?
No. it's fine, it's not optional. I guess,
it's
not optional, it's fine.
I think this is complete, more or less. As long as you handle those special cases more explicitly, I think this is really good.
Right. Well, because, and I think in the page mapping as well, the updates are, the data blocks is read, it's modified, and it's written elsewhere. And the previous data page is just left there for garbage collection. It does not contain any live data.
Actually, no. That's not true. With page level mapping, you need to do data movement. Yeah.
In the garbage collection.
Thinking incorrectly. Yeah. Because if you pick a block to erase, there is no guarantee that the block has all invalid data. There might be some live pages in there that you have to move out. This is called the partial merge.
Partial merge, okay.
You have to do the partial merge. Yeah. Yeah,
that's true. The thing is that you could have live data
in the
block
victim.
You select as victim.
Yeah. So in the partial merge, it's a separate case. I think you can handle. Do you understand what a partial merge is?
I'm trying to recollect.
So correct me if I'm wrong about this, Lewis. This is what I think it is. So let's say you have page level mapping, right? So you have blocks in your SSD, and you're always writing sequentially to some block. Okay? And page level mapping gives you complete flexibility. You write a page any way you want, right? So because of that, the SSD becomes fragmented. And each block may contain some valid pages. So what you do is, let's say that I'm writing to this SSD at this point, right? This Roy guy. And let's say you choose this block as victim. It contains some invalid pages, but mostly valid pages. So what you're going to do is move all the valid pages out and write those sequentially to the block that you're currently writing data pages to. The foreground request. And then this block will no longer have any valid pages, or at least all the valid pages are available elsewhere. You update the mapping and then mark this for erasure. Mm-hmm. So it's a simpler operation than the merge operation with hybrid mapping.
Right, because.
But there is data movement involved. So it's not a simple erase operation.
Okay, so I will try to fit that as well in the stack.
I think then you would have to have a hybrid mapping, and then followed by page level mapping, and then page level mapping will have another path just like you have with hybrid mapping, which will be less complex, and then the final case would be the block level mapping.
Right.
So here, what I mean to say is that this hybrid mapping, this line will go into another decision box, with say page mapping, and then yes would go into a similar kind of discussion that you have with hybrid mapping, and the no would go to the block level mapping. And finally, you have erase. And all of those guys will merge into the erase, just like you have here. So hybrid and the page level mapping will merge into this specific, and then you can go into end. Okay. I think that's straightforward. No, this is really good. I like the level of detail you go into, and I think very little work is required. So what is the next step for along this direction?
The right.
It seems now the right may not be all that difficult, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now I thought the garbage collection was the most complex, and I think we have a very good handle on that right now. And I would expect the writes would be, maybe some writes will trigger garbage collection,
right.
And then we have to handle that, but then
each time
there is a garbage collection, we can redirect it to this one because we already handled that wait for garbage collection
path. Right. It should be similar to the wreath operations, except that we may involve some reclaiming of space and things, some garbage collection operations. And one thing is worth mentioning at this point is that, I mean, these diagrams, although they are very simple, I think, at this point, it takes some time to come up with the actual diagram, right?
Absolutely.
I can show you the many diagrams that I've been plotting and
I can imagine you're showing us the finished product and
I'm putting everything together that it becomes simple enough. It's kind of the challenging part, but I mean I think it's worth the effort because in the end this becomes very concise.
Thank you.
Can I just give you something?
Oh wow!
Lumen.
They're lumen.
Oh great! I can just go plug in the ground and they're gonna.
No, I think you
eat
them.
Oh, you eat them? Okay. Oh cool! Yeah. Wow! Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah. So. I can appreciate the level of effort that goes into this.
Yeah, the simplicity. I think it's one of the goals of the
diagrams. Absolutely. So I was just discussing earlier with Lewis and Ariel, and maybe you have some comments also. We were thinking about the two, you know, possibly having either two papers talking about, one talking about the modeling part and the other talking about the profiling, or a single integrated paper. I think both views are appealing. The first one perhaps because of simplicity, that we focus on one thing and maybe it's an easier paper to write, and the second one because of the level of contribution, because we integrate all of those together, connect everything to everything else, and but of course it's a more complex and difficult paper to write.
I think at this point it's still a little bit too early to really make a judgment on whether this is worth of one paper or two papers, right? I mean, in terms of content. And it could be in the end that you can't go without the other, or in the end maybe there's just, you know, too much stuff that you have to sort of divide it into multiple papers. So it can go both ways. I guess at this point that's just, you know, work on it until it comes out and actually say, oh, you can't really have this model without a modeling part. It doesn't seem to be complete. In that case, we have to add the modeling part. On the other hand, it could be, you know, enough stuff that, you know, the machine is publishable, and then you just go ahead and do that, right?
Okay, so I guess I've asked Lewis to look at the experiments again to, for each experiment, I think if we can come up with at least one hypothesis that we are trying to either validate or invalidate using that experiment, I think that will be really good, and that will also maybe allow us to identify experiments that do not have any hypothesis, and maybe we should be abandoning them, right? So let's go over one revision of that, and Ariel is going to work next on the right completion or the right path, and I think once we make some more progress, then we can talk about some possible skeleton of a paper.
That's true. Yeah.
One paper or two papers, whatever the case might be.
I think so. In terms of this, I'm sorry, I'm coming late on this. So is it possible that we actually sort of on a parallel track we can start some kind of a modeling to see whether this, because this is all hypothesis to some extent, right? So this is all, you know, so far what we collected from all other papers, it seems this is a reasonable thing that what the flash package or the flash memory seems to be doing. And, but we don't really have a concrete clue on whether this is going to be this case or this is not.
Is this case model valid?
Right, yeah, exactly. So if this is the case, probably, you know, that's sort of tied up with the previous question I had about how much we need to look into the simulator, and so that we could actually borrow anything from that, or we just develop our own, and which it seems to be really easy to. You know, at this stage, I don't really see a lot of complications in terms of, you know, as long as we have a very explicit process of all these things going on, it's just a matter of waiting for some resources to be freed up, for example, is there a current, you know, processing or not. You know, these are all model, you know, you can really put into the model and see what's going on. And
I think there is a risk, though, to work with a simulator to validate the model, because it might...
But how are you going to do that?
There might be an argument or criticism saying that, well, you are building the simulator based on your model, so of course it will validate your model, right? On the other hand, it might not be a true reflection of a real device.
I'm thinking, well, not really using the simulator to validate the model, but the simulator is a reflection of the model.
Oh, it's
and,
a reflection
of
the model.
Yeah, it's just to say, is this reasonable as for the results that actually coming from? So
from this model.
Yeah, from this one.
Match with the real device.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, we're not really trying to just
have
a simulator.
Yeah, that's what it didn't make sense to me, but I misunderstood what you meant.
So if that's the case, that we actually can provide us more than just validation. Suppose that it's validated, at least we got some shape of the curve seems to be interesting that reflects some sort of reality.
Yeah.
And what we could do is say, look, you know, if you change your eviction policy or change the way that how the erase operation is actually handled in terms of maybe the threshold of actually engaging these kind of operations, you know, we could actually provide more insight in terms of how to prove. That's number one, to prove the throughput, improve the performance. Number two is, say, we actually interested in the operating system optimizations and how the device would really respond. So one way to do it is actually go ahead and implement the operating system to actually handle all the IO requests differently and, you know, to shape them so that, you know, it favors the SSD. On the other hand, you say, you know, if you do this, suppose we actually have a workload that is sort of a more of a sequential write or whatever, and fit into the simulator, say, look, this is going to, you know, generate a lot more. And, you know, we do both ways. You know, we do it at the profiler level, and we really measure it, it's actually coming up, and we do some kind of insight in terms of using a simulator and saying, look, this is because, you know, some of the, you know, happening inside the simulator that causing this.
Mm-hmm.
And we validated that there as well. And that will give, you know, sort of a, we can make the argument both ways.
Yeah, I think the scale or the detail of the simulator has to be, you know, carefully chosen because, I mean, if we want to compete with what those guys simulated, maybe it will not be realistic. And, you know, for instance, things like, you know, bus contention and ganging and those kinds of things between flash package and controller, if we want to go into that level of detail, it might become an extensive effort to develop the simulator.
And on the other hand, we can make some simplified assumptions and saying this is, you know, the contention is the probability. I mean, you know, you probably don't do that, but, you know, we're just making, trying to make the discussion. It's, you know, maybe we can do something in that regard. And I think, other than the simulators being published that we got from Microsoft, there is no...
No, there is a DFTL paper. They also built a simulator.
Okay.
But I don't think they actually publish it. Right? It's not available.
Yeah.
They did implement a simulator. At least that's what
the paper said. Actually, I have seen a couple of implementation of Flash, but they never make it public. So, so I would say that there is no other one but the Microsoft.
Right.
And in each case, the simulator that they implement is they simulate the specific properties of the SSD that they are interested in. For instance, I think the DFTL just simulates the mapping, right? And maybe the garbage collection and things like that. It doesn't have to implement all the other details.
Yeah.
In our case, maybe we don't need some of the details that implemented by the Microsoft simulator.
Yeah, we could actually focus on something else as well. I mean, in terms of characteristics, trying to capture some of the characteristics of, say the garbage collection, or you know, we can focus on something as definitely an action and make a unique point. I don't, you know, worry about the uniqueness of simulator, but rather to want to see whether we can really simulate it or not. If we could, you know, that would be great. That would be, that means that that to some extent we actually you know, basically map the processes that are actually happening inside as the
that
sort of a proof of, you know, reverse engineer. Not only we reverse engineer, but also sort of figure out exactly the processes actually taking place.
Yeah. So I agree, and but I'm also want us to be cautious of getting too involved into building the simulator. I think if we can validate the model with a, you know, with an approximate high level simulator, I think that's good. But if it seems like it's not going to work out with a very detailed simulator, then
I agree. But what I've seen, I mean, given that we are not really going to go with per page level or whatever unit level, that, you know, and model all the question contentions at a very detailed level, what I see is the simulator could be built, you know, within a day. I mean, it's not anything that substantial is going to, you know, distract us from, you know, getting what we want to be. But on the other hand, the value for spending that a day and to get something which would sort of add to what we actually already, you know, all the hypotheses we put on the table, that seems to be worthwhile to do that, right? So not to really, you know, distract from the main thing we want to solve.
Okay, so I agree. So let's work on the model some more, and I think once we are confident with all the paths and the control flow and all that, then maybe we can start looking into some basic simulation.
Yeah. That's good. We could do that. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So let's
turn.
Meeting is adjourned. And
all right.
When should we meet next?
Thursday. Or
probably. Maybe we can meet after a week instead, because it seems like there is enough things to work on for 1 week.
Right? Yeah, so I will make a suggestion if we're going to meet 1 week, and we meet on the Thursday of next week instead of Monday. So Wednesday I have a deadline. So
okay, that's
extremely busy, but I would really want to see on Thursday, you know, the modeling part. So that maybe Ari and I can sort of start with the modeling part, you know, together with the profiling part.
Okay, let's meet on the next following Thursday then. Yeah, so a week and a half in that case. So that will allow us to, you know, put all the things together and maybe at that point we can also brainstorm about some initial skeleton for one or two papers. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right,
guys.
Sorry that I, anyway. Talk to you.
Sure. Yeah. So, Lewis, I guess, yeah, we are supposed to meet, right? Let me see what we can do.
Is that the new device?
What? No, it's still my old computer.